Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Christina Clack. I am your board secretary. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age or your abilities or your inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite guests and visitors and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or by our minister as soon as we select one. Today, Barb Park will be, our president, will be introducing our guest speaker, so I won't steal her thunder. I'll let her come up in a few minutes and do that. Now I'm going to invite Barb up to introduce our speaker today.
Well, we're very privileged today to have the Reverend Sandra Ingham with us today, better known by your friends as Sandy. She graduated from Starr King, and many of you know her, or she might look familiar to you, because she spent many years at First Society, first as a parent of involved in Sunday school, and for several years as the administrator there. So I'm figuring she should be a great help to Dan, because she knows how important it is to get information to him on time. So she has served several small congregations, including most recently Ripon in Green Bay. She's going to speak to us today. And then after the salad lunch, we will be having a parish meeting because Sandra is the person that our ministerial search committee has found for us and is recommending for our consideration to hire. So she's sort of auditioning with us this morning. And then we will be voting on her after the salad lunch. We'll have a parish meeting, and I encourage all members to come, because clearly we need a quorum for this. This is an important vote. So we welcome, very much welcome, Reverend Sandra Ingham.
First, I want to thank Barb for that wonderful introduction. We'll see if I can live up to it. I wish I'd brought my tap shoes, since this is an audition. But it is an honor and a privilege and a blessing for me to be here. These are the opening words. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. Christina, would you light our chalice, please? May this light, or these lights, kindle within us the warmth of compassion, not too much warmth today, the glow of love, the fire of commitment, and the light of truth. I don't usually include two responsive readings in the same service, but I am today. It's part of the audition thing. The first one, I couldn't remember the number, so it's my fault, not Dan's. Well, it's nobody's fault, but it's obviously not in your program. It is number 466 in the back of the big hymnal. 466. No fair reading ahead to see what the other one is on your little. So. If you would read the italicized part, that would be fun. Let religion be to us life and joy.
Let it be a voice of renewing challenge to the best we have and may be. Let it be a call to generous action.
Let religion be to us a dissatisfaction with things that are, which bids us serve more eagerly the true and right.
Let it be sorrow that opens for us the way of sympathy, understanding, and service to suffering humanity.
Let religion be to us the wonder and lure of that which is only partly known and understood. Let religion be to us security and serenity because of its truth and beauty and because of the enduring worth and power of the loyalties which it engenders.
Let it be to us hope and purpose and the discovering of opportunities to express our best through daily tasks.
Religion, uniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere.
Holding before our eyes the prospect of a better life for humankind, which each may help to make actual.
Many years ago, I gave up religion, or thought I did. I had never heard of Unitarian Universalism then. I did not feel particularly safe or at home in the religion of my childhood. I did not want to sleep over. I did not want to commit to even one night with or without my teddy bear. I did not know then that if you're in a religious congregation and ask God for longer life, you are likely to get it, according to psychologist Michael McCullough, who isn't religiously devout himself. And luckily for us, it doesn't even seem to matter which God you ask. Any sort of so-called religious activity increases your longevity. According to a study done in the year 2000 and since confirmed by other researchers, at any given point, a religiously active person was 25% more likely than a non-religious person to remain alive. So this statistic somewhat baffled me. I considered calling this morning's reflections Coming Home because that is how I felt the first time I attended a Unitarian Universalist service. I felt that I had come home. But we are in the middle of baseball season, and I am a big baseball fan, so I opted for safe at home. And I actually found it to be a better description of how I felt that day when I first entered a Unitarian Universalist church or building or space or whatever word you prefer. Just don't get hung up on these wonderful descriptive words such as church and religion. I'm into reclaiming some of them. I don't remember the subject of the sermon that day, but I do remember that I felt safe. I felt safe in expressing my beliefs. I felt that no one was going to ridicule me for my theological position. I felt comfortable and at home, knowing that I could express my beliefs and that these beliefs did not have to fit into any mold, nor did I have to utter any creeds or recite any dogma, unless I wanted to, of course. That was remarkable, unique. Eventually, I decided that I wanted my life work to be centered on Unitarian Universalism. That led to seminary and almost 10 years in parish ministry before I realized that I needed a break. My father, my last remaining parent, died in 2008, about the same time as the economy fell apart. The congregation that I was then serving was struggling financially, and I was not performing as well as I could and should have been. I took a sabbatical. I extended it. I thought maybe I was finished being a minister. I hiked in the southwest of the United States. I hiked some more. I must have thought about ministry on some level because once in a while, I would check the listings to see what was available. And then I would hike some more. Until sometime during late March, when, because of a chance communication with a friend from seminary days, I learned that Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society in Madison, Wisconsin, was looking for a part-time minister. The fact that this was right around April 1st was not lost on me. Was this the universe's idea of an April Fool's joke? I wasn't really looking for another ministerial position, was I? Wasn't I finished with all that? But I thought it wouldn't hurt to make a tentative informal contact with the search committee, would it? And here we are. And just as I realized I was ready to jump back into congregational life, one final push from the universe occurred. Where was this year's General Assembly? Why, in Phoenix, only 130 miles from Flagstaff, Arizona, where I am currently living. General Assembly, or GA, is an annual event held in a different location every year where we conduct the business of the Unitarian Universalist Association and immerse ourselves in programs and lectures and worship services and laughter and joy and sorrow. And what a General Assembly it was. I don't think that I have ever been more proud of this faith tradition of ours than I was 3 weeks ago yesterday when we held a candlelight vigil at the Maricopa County Jail where Sheriff Joe runs what amounts to a concentration camp for the documented and the undocumented alike. Our vigil included almost 3,000 Unitarian Universalists, plus a few Baptists, and folks from the United Church of Christ, and wonderful people from several local grassroots organizations with whom we have partnered. This was the biggest protest ever against conditions in that jail, a sad facility that has been in existence for over 20 years. For me, our vigil was proof that together we can do such great things. Together, we can take on the work of the world. But first we have to prepare ourselves for this work, which includes both the work of building our own faith community and the work that needs to be done in the wider world. How do we do this? Well, I've discovered that you are already doing a lot of this work. And there's certainly not time this morning for me to consider all of the things of what I believe, all those things that go into building a strong faith community. So I'm only going to mention a few of the ingredients that I think are necessary. Let's start with radiance. How often do you ever hear that word? Radiance. Bill Scholes used this word, radiance, in one of the programs I went to in Phoenix. Now, some of you will recognize that name. Scholes was president of the of our Unitarian Universalist Association in the 80s, I think. Before that, I believe that he was president of our Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. And after he was president of UUA, he was head of Amnesty International. And now he's back as president of the service committee. I was startled when he threw out the word radiance. I think he's on to something important. He used the word in this sense, helping each other clear away anything that stands in the way of tapping into our radiance, our inner goodness, and our compassion. Helping each other clear away our baggage and our sorrow and our pain. Things that all of us carry so that we can more easily get to our underlying humanity. This isn't a sermon about radiance, though there may be one in the future. But as I said, I think he's on to something, because we need a new underused word to help us talk about the mystery and the wonder and the awesomeness of the universe and the importance of recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Another vital ingredient found in a strong faith community is identity. How do you identify yourselves? Who are you? How do you want the larger community to think of you when they think of Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society? We will find our identity as a faith community in tandem with finding our radiance. We will know how we want to be seen in the larger world when we feel safe at home. Humility is a factor in this process of uncovering our radiance and maintaining a safe place. When I was in seminary in Berkeley at Starr King School for the Ministry, which is part of the Graduate Theological Union, I went to the bank one day. It happened to be the Wells Fargo Bank, but that's a little irrelevant to the story. And I got back to my room and I looked at my deposit slip. And at the bottom, in handwriting, it said, "Thank you, Jesus." The nerve of that bank teller putting his personal beliefs on the bottom of my deposit slip. I clearly had a duty to defend the world from creeping what exactly? Creeping fundamentalism. Quite sure of my righteousness, I called the bank. "Oh, that's terrible," the first person I talked to said. Let me give you a manager. "Oh, that is terrible," said the manager. "I'll get back to you." And she did, within a day. Her voice sounded sheepish. "Did you know," she said, "that it's common for tellers to sign their names at the bottom of your deposit slips? And that is what Jesus did." I seem to get a dose of humility often. In the long run, this is a good thing, though I don't always recognize that fact when I'm in the midst of the humiliation. Humility helps me remember that I don't know everything. Indeed, I don't know much of anything, really. Humility reminds me of how difficult it is to be truly accepting of the beliefs of others. Humility slaps me upside the head from time to time and says, "Hey, what's with this judgmental attitude of yours?" Humility, I believe, can help us be even more welcoming than we already are. One of my dearest friends from seminary is the Reverend Lynn Kerr, now minister of the Maumee Valley Unitarian Universalist Congregation in northwestern Ohio near Toledo. This past November, Lynn's congregation purchased a rainbow flag to hang outside their building, which is located on a somewhat busy road. After some discussion about whether or not the flag could be stolen, the board and Lynn decided, so what? They would get another one. What was the point of their having gone through the process to become a welcoming congregation if no one knew this? On a windy March evening, right before a board meeting, they hung up the flag, not without some difficulty because of the wind. They began their board meeting. About 20 minutes into the meeting, Lynn writes in a newsletter column, "Our front doors opened, and a middle-aged man stepped through, flung out his arms and exclaimed, "I'm gay!" As it turned out, this man belonged to another church where, he said, they would never hang a flag like the one he had just seen. He wanted people in the Maumee building to know how excited he was upon seeing that flag. He told my friend Lynn that he was an old queen who still struggled to find places where he could fit in. Maybe he would go back to the Maumee Valley Church, or maybe he wouldn't, but he wanted them to know that he loved them for what they did. 20 minutes, Lynn writes. 20 minutes! That is all it took for someone to know that our church would welcome him in. Being a welcoming congregation doesn't necessarily require a whole lot of time. It does require vigilance and creativity on our part. And it requires group action, another important ingredient in building a strong community. Now, that may seem like a no-brainer. How can you have a strong community without working together as a group? But throughout our history as Unitarians, not as Universalists, but as Unitarians, we have overemphasized the importance of the individual and neglected the importance of community. You will undoubtedly hear more about this later if things go well later today. What kind of group do we want to have in here in this beautiful, sacred space? I want it to be as inclusive as possible, though alas, I don't have a magic formula for accomplishing that short of hanging out flags and being very clear about who we are. Those of you who have gone to General Assembly in the past will know about the Where Lecture, a very important part of GA. Past speakers have included Martin Luther King Jr., Julian Bond, Mary Oliver, Marion Wright Edelman, and so many wonderful people. This year's Where Lecture was given by journalist. Now, if there are people who speak fluent Spanish in here, I'm going to try, and I've got it here phonetically, and I'm going to take Spanish lessons. This year's Where Lecture was given by journalist Maria Hinojosa, anchor and managing editor of National Public Radio's Latina USA. Maria spoke about being invisible and how we are creating two Americas, and about how important it is to find your voice and tell your story. She said that the core value of making the invisible visible is what moves me. She repeatedly asked us this question: what do you want your community to look like? She told us about meeting Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel, who survived the Holocaust. Wiesel, Hinojosa said, taught her to question the use of the term illegal immigrant. Wiesel said she should not use the word illegal to refer to these immigrants. Why? Hinojosa asked. Because there is no such thing as an illegal human being, Wiesel replied. You may have broken an immigration law, in this case actually only a misdemeanor, but that does not make you an illegal person. What do we want our community to look like? Hinojosa ended her remarks on a note of hope, and I will end my remarks with her story. She reminded us that there are many stories of a new American reality that doesn't want anything to do with two Americas. Examples of American people trying to overcome differences. She told us about the family of Antonio Hernandez, an undocumented Mexican immigrant who was a cook at the Windows on the World restaurant at the top of one of the World Trade Center buildings on 9/11. He had a wife, Julia, and four children. Hinojosa was a CNN correspondent then, and she had a team at the Hernandez home the next day, September 12th. They put Julia Hernandez on television and told her story of being a widow now, a widow of a hero, but a widow who could be deported at any time. After the story aired, many people from around the country wrote to Julio. Hinojosa says that it was that moment when I remember feeling like the entire United States identified as New Yorkers, as citizens of the world, where there were no borders because there was so much grief among us. That December, I got a call, says Hinojosa, from a South Carolina gay man, A.J. Dinkins. Well, I wish that I could tell you Hinojosa's story the way she did, complete with the South Carolinian drawl and the exuberance with which A.J. Dinkins talked about doing something to help Julia and her children. Hello, Maria, this is A.J., and in that wonderful accent, and acting as if he'd known her all her life. And Dinkins wasn't living in South Carolina in September of 2011. He was living in Augusta, Maine, with Rudy, his farmer, not former, his farmer partner. And together they had raised several thousand dollars for Julia Hernandez and her kids. A.J. Dinkins went to New York City and brought the family gifts. He told Hinojosa that he and his partner wanted the children to visit their farm in Maine. Right, Maria thought, like that is ever going to happen. That family can't afford to take that kind of a trip. 6 months later, Julia and her four children visited Dinkins and Rudy at their expense for a week on their farm. The gay hairdresser, the stern New England farmer, and the undocumented Mexican immigrant became best friends. I have a photo of myself, Julia Hernandez and A.J. Dinkins wearing his American flag t-shirt, says Hinojosa. That is my vision for a new America, where people get out of their own comfort zone and embrace difference and only see their common humanity. That is my vision, too, not only for America, but for all of our Unitarian Universalist communities. What do you want your community to look like? What is your vision for this community? What is our identity? I am glad that you are here now, at this place, at this time, and not you individually, though that is important, but you as a group, as a community, as an institution, as a faith tradition. We might shy away from using the word religion, but the ideas expressed in our two responsive readings this morning about what religion really is, well, that is a different matter altogether. Let religion be to us life and joy, uniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere. In a world with so much uncertainty and despair, we need a religion that teaches our hearts to hope and our hands to serve. And that is exactly what we have right here in this community. May we leave this sacred space thinking about what our identity will be in the larger world, remembering that together we can accomplish great things. Si se puede. Yes, we can. I invite you now into the congregational response part of the service. am I flunking? There's a time and a place. I'm not going to get way into this, but I have to say a sentence for a congregational response. And I told the search committee, because we talked about this at length. We talked about this at length, and I hope that we don't always have one. I mean, I don't want to take it away. I think it's very important, but I think there are times, hopefully, when a service can be very moving. Not that this was. Oh, I am flunking. but you know, where maybe there isn't anything to say, but there will be later, of course. But somebody has the mic. Oh, good, save me. Initially, it was ministry, and actually, I wanted part time, so that helps. But it was ministry, and my profession. I mean, I could have gone and worked in a bookstore. Well, maybe not a bookstore; they're disappearing. But something else. But first, it was ministry. Then it was Prairie, and then even though Madison's home, it didn't factor in. to the decision. And as many of you in this room know, I've thought about Prairie every time, every single time you've been looking for a minister, because it fit in with when I got out of seminary and when I was between jobs. But I needed full-time income those other times. No, I agree. I mean, it's easy to say God is love, but there's so many different ways of viewing whatever God is, and I didn't like to use that word for a long, long time. I grew up Presbyterian, and I sort of threw everything out with the bathwater or something. But I do believe that the word God can be a very convenient shorthand, especially when, you know, for the mystery and the wonder and everything we don't know. But I'm a humanist, basically. But when I'm out at an interfaith meeting or I'm working with other groups in the community, I have to be comfortable with that word, the word God. And I may have gotten off what you were asking. Last night was very informal, and actually I have repeated, I think, a great deal of my parts of my conversation from both last night and Christina, maybe from also yesterday afternoon. So you've heard a great deal of it, actually. And I was asked what you would expect me to be asked. Although it was really informal and wonderful. It was really to get to know people and try to remember names. And we didn't get into big theological debates. Once we touched on politics at one table.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wrap up now because it's getting late. But why don't we thank her for being here. And we can talk with Sandra more after the service if you need.
One more reading about religion. The first reading from the hymnal was written in, I think, the 50s, maybe the early 60s, by Vincent Silliman, who is a humanist, was a humanist. This one was written very recently. So I'll read the caps. In a world with so much hatred and violence, it's on this. In a world with so much brutality and fear,
we need a religion that seeks justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
In a world with so many persons abused and neglected,
we need a religion that calls us to accept one another and encourage one another to spiritual growth.
In a world with so much dogmatism and falsehood,
we need a religion that challenges.
In a world with so much tyranny and oppression,
we need a religion that affirms the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process.
In a world with so much inequality and strife,
we need a religion that strives toward the goal of the world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
In a world with so much environmental degradation, in a world with so much uncertainty and despair,
we need a religion that teaches our hearts to hope and our hands to serve.
Offertory.
Thank you so much, Reverend Ingham.
Oh, well, thank you. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. And if you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Go in peace, and I think you're supposed to go eat salad.